This podcast details true crime cases. It contains adult themes and may contain descriptions of violence. It is not intended for children. Listener discretion is advised.
Thank you for joining me for today's episode of Once Upon a Crime. In this month's series, I'll discuss cases of Hollywood actors who ran afoul of the law. Today, I'll tell you the story of a woman who, although her life started out rough, began a promising acting career, landing roles in shows like Dexter and The Sopranos. But after falling in love with a mentally unstable musician, her life will fall apart, and she'll become party to a grisly murder. This is the second chapter in the series, Tarnished Hollywood, Grant and Amanda Hayes, and the murder of Laura Ackerson. Amanda Hayes' early years were difficult and tumultuous. Born Amanda Perry Tucker in Taft, Texas in 1972, Amanda's mother married twice and had three children before Amanda was born. After her second marriage ended, Amanda's mother, Retha Faye, worked in a brothel. As reported by the family, Amanda never knew her biological father. She would, however, know several stepfathers. Retha married a total of 8 or 9 times. Not all of her stepfathers were kind. One was particularly mean and abusive. The family moved around often during the time he was married to Retha. Amanda's older half-sister Karen was already married when Amanda was born. Karen, whose son Dalton was only 2 years younger than Amanda, raised her little sister as one of her own children. They would remain close, and Amanda relied on Karen for help and advice as she grew up. When Amanda was only 15 years old, she escaped the unpredictability of her mother's home by becoming a teenage bride. In 1987, she married 21-year-old Scott Elmer, just before her 16th birthday. Their daughter Shay was born in 1989. A year later, she and Elmer divorced. When Shay was still a preschooler, Amanda married for the second time. Ron Adamson, an attorney, provided Amanda and her daughter with a stable home. Amanda was able to finish high school and began taking college classes. But her second marriage didn't last any longer than her first. Within 8 months, the couple divorced. Amanda and 5-year-old Shay moved in with her sister Karen in Lubbock, Texas. Amanda met a children's theater director and was introduced to the stage. She began helping with touring productions and found herself excited about her life for the first time in a long time. She learned all she could about acting and the theater. A friend introduced her to Nikki Smith. Smith was 14 years older than Amanda and was a wealthy entrepreneur. He could provide financial stability and a home for her and Shay. In 1998, 26-year-old Amanda wed for the third time. They moved into a beautiful home near Austin, Texas, where Shay began the fourth grade. Finally, Amanda's life was stable and secure, and she had no money worries. But her world was upended once more after just 2 years of marriage. Her husband was injured while diving into a lake. He suffered a significant spinal cord injury and was paralyzed. After a few months, his diagnosis became even more grim when he was told the injury was progressing to his brainstem, which would result in his complete immobility soon. Already reliant on a ventilator to keep him alive, Smith decided to have it removed and spent his last few days at home. He died on October 11, 2000. Amanda sold her portion of her husband's business assets to his brother to keep the operation within the family. She received a sizable inheritance from Smith's estate. She now had money to support herself and her daughter without relying on others for handouts. Now with money and freedom, Amanda threw herself into acting. She applied and was accepted to a New York acting school. Shay moved to the Big Apple with her mom, but eventually decided to return to Texas to begin high school. She lived with her Aunt Karen, but spent part of the time with her father Scott, who lived in New Mexico. Amanda finished the acting program and moved to Los Angeles to begin auditioning for roles. She landed parts in television shows including The O.C., Dexter, Zoe 101, and According to Jim. She appeared in the Emmy Award-winning series The Sopranos and had an uncredited role in the movie The Stepford Wives. Amanda, now in her early 30s, was dissatisfied with her acting career. She'd only received minor roles and felt she was getting nowhere. She was also convinced that, at her age, she had little chance of working steadily in Hollywood. She returned to Texas and obtained a real estate license. Amanda continued to bounce around trying to decide what to do with her life. She decided to give New York another try. She moved back to Manhattan and finished credits to earn a cosmetology license. She was hired to manage a salon in the city, but remained restless. In 2007, she took a vacation to the Virgin Islands and fell in love with the island of St. John. She decided to make it her home, taking odd jobs before being offered a position as an art gallery director. She'd taken up painting while she was married to Nikki Smith and loved working with artists and discovering new talent. Missing her daughter, Amanda talked Shay into moving to St. John to finish high school. She became upset when Shay dropped out in her senior year, and they fought about this. Shay bounced back and forth between her mother's home in St. John and her father's in New Mexico. One night in 2009, in a club on the island, Amanda met 30-year-old Grant Hayes. He was a popular singer-songwriter-musician from the U.S. who'd recently begun performing around St. John. She thought he was talented and good-looking. In an attempt to spend time with him alone to get to know him better, Amanda offered to pay him to give her guitar lessons. Soon they entered into a romantic relationship. Amanda may or may not have known it initially, but behind his charming demeanor, Grant Hayes III was a mentally unstable manipulator, and he was also a married man with two very young children. Grant Ruffin Hayes III was born on April 30, 1979. His parents were Patsy and Grant Hayes Jr. He had one sister, Grantina, who was called Tina. Grant was a charmer from an early age. He was popular with the girls and was a skilled guitar player. At 18, he began playing in nightclubs around his hometown of Raleigh, North Carolina. Like Amanda, Grant married young. He was only 18 when he wed Emily Lubbers, a ballet dancer. Grant also composed his own songs. His wife Emily was often an inspiration for his music. However, Grant began a pattern during his first marriage that carried on throughout his life. He possessed an oversized ego that made him believe he could do anything, but he rarely followed through on his larger-than-life dreams. It was his belief that his musical ability entitled him to be popular, famous, and well-paid for his talent. But his work ethic was lacking. He rarely completed anything that required hard work and effort. He also expected women to take care of him and cater to his needs. He had no compunction about expecting his partner to be the breadwinner, but also expected her to focus the attention on him, build his ego, and support his dreams. Grant quit jobs or was let go repeatedly. He complained that most of his positions were beneath him or didn't suit him. Emily attended university and held down a job to provide for them both. The marriage quickly unraveled and the couple divorced. Grant entered into a deep depression and began seeing a psychiatrist. He was prescribed medication for depression and bipolar disorder. Prescription drugs were soon supplemented with other substances. Grant began drinking more heavily and smoking cocaine. Grant Hayes tended to fixate on thoughts and ideas to an extreme level. Raised in the church, he first immersed himself in his Christian beliefs, reading the Bible and praying daily. In 2003, he became obsessed with the music of Tupac Shakur. He now replaced his Bible verses with lyrics from Tupac's songs. He often discussed Tupac's life with others as if they were parables. His mental health went from not good to much worse when he was introduced to a hallucinogenic drug called 2CE, an alternative to the drug MDMA. A synthetic drug, 2CE causes intense hallucinations. Its effects can last between 6 to 10 hours. But can also alter brain chemistry indefinitely, especially when combined with other drugs or medications. Some effects of 2CE use include agitation, hallucinations or delirium, and violent or aggressive behavior. Grant's friends reported that he began snorting the drug frequently, and within weeks, it altered his thoughts and perceptions considerably. Quote, he was no longer capable of having a normal conversation, one friend said. It seemed he'd started believing the first thing that popped into his head. He'd continue this train of thought to nowhere, and then start a new one in a split second. He had lost something, something in his mind. A part of him wasn't there anymore, end quote. Grant continued to play his music in Raleigh nightclubs. One winter night in 2006, he was performing at the Blue Martini Bar when he met 22-year-old Laura Ackerson. Laura had recently located to North Carolina. Originally from Michigan, her parents divorced when she was a toddler. She moved to Iowa with her mother, Brenda, and attended Linville Sully High School in Sully, graduating in 2003. Laura was bright and creative with an open and friendly personality. She was a pretty girl with a big smile and shoulder-length brown hair. Her brother, Jason, moved to North Carolina when he was 22. He and Laura talked by phone, and she decided to join him a couple of years later to make a fresh start in a new location. She stayed with Jason for 6 months before moving into her own apartment in Raleigh. In 2004, she worked at an Applebee's restaurant where she met Heidi Schumacher. She and Heidi became fast friends. Laura began taking online community college classes and earned her Associate of Arts degree. Her friend Heidi had started a career in real estate, and Laura took a pre-licensing course to do the same. However, she soon realized she wanted to pursue a more creative field. She pursued her interest in graphic arts and design while holding down a job providing decorating solutions at a furniture store. Her two closest friends in the area were her brother Jason and friend Heidi. In the spring of 2007, she called her brother and excitedly told him about a new guy she was dating named Grant Hayes. Jason wished her well, but he was concerned. His sister had a string of bad relationships in the past. He felt her inability to pick a stable love interest probably stemmed from their parents' strained marriage and acrimonious divorce. He wished her well, but hoped she'd take things slow. If he voiced his concerns, they fell on deaf ears. Just weeks later, 23-year-old Laura married 28-year-old Grant Hayes III on their shared birthday, April 30th. Laura, immediately smitten with the musician, took their mutual birth date 5 years apart as a sign they were soulmates. Laura surprised her best friend, Heidi, when she met her for dinner hours after tying the knot. When she announced she was married, her friend Heidi was shocked. She hadn't realized the relationship was that serious. Heidi didn't want to throw a damper on Laura's obvious happiness, but she thought her friend had jumped into a marriage way too soon. Let's be real, she had. Laura hardly knew her new groom, and when his true nature soon came to the surface, she may have realized she'd made a mistake. Grant's volatile personality and narcissistic tendencies didn't take long to emerge after the I do's were said. The ink was barely dry on the marriage certificate when Grant told Laura he wanted to sleep with other women. She, of course, refused, shocked by his admission. Laura thought her husband was musically talented and wanted to help him achieve a successful musical career. She reached out to other clubs to book gigs for him, but nothing was ever good enough for Grant. He complained incessantly about not receiving the attention and accolades he felt he deserved as an artist. His behavior was often erratic, and he came off as aggressive and insulting to other musicians and nightclub managers. Grant arrived late for a gig one night and was berated by another musician. Laura was present and saw her husband react angrily and pull a knife on the man. Grant later claimed it was justified because the guy had disrespected him by cursing. He began burning his bridges and had trouble booking gigs at certain clubs. He also began insulting Laura and criticizing her. He didn't like her friend Heidi and threw a fit whenever Laura wanted to spend time with her. He embarrassed Laura by talking graphically about his sexual prowess in front of audience members who came to see him play. He wanted Laura to verify these brags by talking about the size of his penis. She was mortified. Later, he became angry and said he didn't understand why she had a problem with this. He told his wife that everyone thought she was trash anyway, because she was a white girl in a relationship with a black man. He expressed anger and hatred for most women, including all of Laura's friends. They were all too dumb or fat or not good enough to be around them, according to Grant. Grant Hayes was obviously a very insecure man who tried to hide it through braggadocio. He made himself feel less insecure by humiliating and controlling his wife, Laura. He would comment about their interracial relationship frequently and used it as an excuse for his anger, and sometimes as a reason why things didn't go his way. Laura became afraid of Grant's strange behavior. He displayed odd and violent behavior where he appeared disengaged from reality. He'd go on bizarre paranoid rants and then fall into a restless sleep for hours, during which time his body would twitch and jerk. Grant Hayes went on cocaine-fueled benders. During these times, he expressed his paranoid and delusional beliefs about aliens running the government. He was convinced the world would end on New Year's Eve 2012. He claimed he was a time traveler being monitored and communicated with by beings from another planet. He began showing more contempt for his wife and made her the target of his abuse. Once during one of his manic episodes, he loaded a BB gun and started shooting the pellets at Laura. The gun wasn't powerful enough for the pellets to break the skin, but caused her pain when they struck her. Grant acted like it was a game and ignored her cries for him to stop. Laura may have been tempted to leave her marriage, but felt like she had to stick it out after she became pregnant. If anything, Grant's behavior towards her now became worse. Heidi later relayed a story about being on a phone call with Laura and hearing Grant in the background yelling at her to get off the phone. Laura hung up. Concerned, Heidi drove to her friend's house, arriving just in time to see Grant drive away. Laura opened the door, crying. Her eye was swollen shut and her nose was bleeding. It was evident that her husband had physically assaulted her. Heidi begged her friend to go to the hospital. Laura was in the third trimester of her pregnancy, but she refused. She didn't want anyone to know what had happened. On May 2, 2008, Grant Ruffin Hayes IV was born. He was called Little Grant. Grant's drug use escalated and his behavior became more erratic. Concerned about Laura and the newborn, his family staged an intervention in February 2009. Grant's mother Patsy, sister Tina, and father Grant Jr. called Laura, but not their son, to their home and sat her down. They told Laura that Grant had been talking about a, quote, crazy world takeover plan in which he would impregnate several women of all races and have 50 children. Laura already suspected her husband had been seeing another woman during her pregnancy. He always seemed to have band groupies around him and relished in their attention. The couple fought about this, but Grant seemed to delight in making Laura jealous. Grant's parents ended the meeting by giving Laura Grant's first wife's phone number. Laura called her, and Emily's advice was run. Run as fast as you can. Tired of crazy fees when using travel agencies? Look no further than Aerosand. Aerosand is dedicated to bringing you the easiest travel experience possible. From the moment you start planning your vacation to when you arrive home, they're here to make your trip as stress-free as possible, all with no fees. You heard that right. Aerosand is a fee-free service. My producer, Lorena, is a happy customer. Here's what she told me about her experience with Aerosand. When planning an upcoming girls' trip cruise, I had no idea where to start. Honestly, who has the time? Immediately after reaching out to Aerosand and discussing the type of cruise we were looking for, one of their dedicated, well-traveled representatives got to work researching the best cruise line for our party of 12. They picked the best travel days within our budget and handled everything from room selection to final booking, making it the easiest travel planning experience we've ever had. Thanks, Lorena. Anyone who's ever traveled knows that planning can be stressful and challenging. Let Aerosand help. Even if you already have a trip booked, Aerosand can provide add-ons like VIP airport pickups, tours, concert tickets, car rentals, and more. Aerosand is certified in Disneyland, Disney World, Disney Cruises, and certified for gold-tier Virgin Voyages, and can book almost any hotel, cruise, theme park, resort, you name it. Check out Aerosand for bachelor, bachelorette parties, wedding parties, anniversaries, birthdays, and other special events. Join the mailing list for special offers and to score deals from 50 to 60% off travel. Emails are sent every 2 weeks, so there's no spamming or full inboxes. Check the website for special deals on destinations and events. Go to aerosand.com, AerosandD.com, and plan your trip today. Laura left Grant, took the baby, and stayed with her friend Heidi. But the separation didn't last. Laura didn't want her child to grow up in a broken home like she had. Her absence did little to make Grant change his ways. When she returned, he began using drugs heavily and hanging out with the more hardcore partiers and patrons of the clubs where he performed. He flew into violent rages and threatened to kill both Laura and Heidi. "I can have you both killed, and no one will ever know what happened to you," he told Laura. Laura finally threatened divorce, and Grant retaliated by saying if she tried to leave, he'd kill both her and her brother Jason. Jason had a child of his own, and afraid his family would also be in danger, Laura backed off. So it must have seemed like divine intervention to Laura when a music promoter and agent approached Grant. Jose Harden was impressed by Grant's music, calling him a male Sade. He thought Grant's folk reggae style of music would prove popular in the Caribbean. He offered to book gigs for him on the island of St. John. St. John is the smallest of the three main Caribbean islands, the other two being St. Thomas and St. Croix. Harden promised that the tropical island was an environment of, quote, no stress and no worries. He said he could line up 5 or 6 gigs a week for Grant in St. John. Grant began calling himself Grant Hayes, spelling it H-A-Z-E, and gained a following soon after arriving on the island. Within a month, he had a girlfriend and spent his nights drinking and doing drugs. In the States, Laura decided it was a good time to leave Grant. She and little Grant moved in with Heidi's parents temporarily. She made plans to move away from the area to live with her father in Michigan. But just before she was set to make the trip, Laura discovered she was pregnant again. She decided to give the marriage another chance. She thought with Grant now feeling more successful in his career and with a new baby, he might calm down and be the husband and father they needed. She decided to move to St. John and reconcile with Grant. Their second son was born 2 months prematurely on August 3, 2009. They named him Gentle Rain, spelled R-E-I-G-N. Laura's life on the island was far from idyllic. She had 2 children under the age of 2 to care for, while Grant spent nights playing in the clubs and partying into the early morning hours. He slept during the day and was messing around with other women. The baby needed special medical care, including a surgical procedure as a result of being born so early. Laura soon left Grant on the island to return to North Carolina with her sons to get Gentle the care he needed. They moved into a rental home and Laura secured babysitting. She took a cleaning job and launched a freelance graphic design business, creating logos and print publications for business owners. Grant did not contribute much financially to their family. Then Grant told her he'd met a woman named Amanda, who was cooking and cleaning for him in exchange for guitar lessons. Laura thought more was going on between them, but he insisted he wasn't attracted to her. He explained that Amanda had money, and he was only seeing her for the, quote, betterment of their family. By late 2009, Laura was overwhelmed trying to work, care for 2 small children, and building a business. She missed her husband and urged him to come home. In January, he told Laura he was flying home. Instead, he flew to New York to follow his new girlfriend, Amanda. Grant Hayes now had a sugar mama. Amanda footed the bill for everything with the money she'd inherited from her late husband, and Grant took full advantage. He now decided he didn't need Laura, but was determined to get custody of his kids. He had Amanda at home to care for them and money to spend. Grant decided Laura was the reason for his former unhappiness. He began treating her like an enemy. He claimed she was an unfit mother and wrote hate-filled songs about her. Laura focused her life around her boys and building her business. Grant stopped sending her financial support for the children, even while he harangued her about spending more time with their oldest son, little Grant. He finally convinced Laura to allow him to take the boy to New York for a 3-day visit in February. 3 days turned into weeks, and Grant refused to return the toddler. Without funds to fly to New York, Laura couldn't retrieve him. She filed a motion in court to force Grant to return the child. Grant retaliated by starting a smear campaign against Laura. He said she was selling sex on the internet and neglecting the boys. He hired an attorney to represent him in a custody suit using Amanda's money. On April 10, 2010, Grant flew himself, Amanda, Amanda's daughter Shay, and little Grant to Las Vegas. They were married in a Las Vegas chapel. He emailed the wedding photos to Laura, taunting her. He told Laura they had never been legally married, claiming that he hadn't signed the marriage certificate. Laura dug out her copy and found that it was true. Grant bragged to his friends and family that he'd married a, quote, Hollywood actress. Grant filed a motion with the court claiming Laura was an unfit parent. It was an ex parte motion, meaning that the judge could make a ruling without Laura being present in court. He went on Grant's word and awarded temporary emergency custody of both children to him. On June 15th, Laura was served the court order and was forced to hand over her infant son, who was still nursing, to her estranged husband. On June 25th, Laura finally had her day in court. However, the judge decided to only grant weekend visits to Laura until a court-appointed psychologist interviewed both of them separately and submitted a report. Laura got a full-time job, started classes in childhood education at the community college, and geared up for the custody battle. On advice, she started recording all her interactions with Grant and Amanda. Amanda believed all the negative things Grant told her about Laura and began referring to her stepchildren's mother as, quote, psycho crazy. Grant and Amanda made pickups, drop-offs, and any communication between Laura and her children difficult. Laura reported to her sister that Grant was a sociopath. He does everything with a smile. Passive-aggressive is an understatement, she said. In October 2010, Grant and Amanda announced that she was pregnant. Grant was still spouting his paranoid beliefs about aliens and the end times, but Amanda took it in stride, telling her daughter, "I can see how it makes sense to him." However, Amanda was now feeling the pressure as Grant's significant other. He was going through her inheritance quickly, paying for attorney's fees, spending money on drugs and alcohol, and barely contributing to the household income. Amanda was now also supporting two children. Grant also expected his wife to be the primary caretaker of the infant and toddler. By the end of 2010, Amanda's inheritance money was almost gone. Grant started pawning her jewelry for cash. Even so, he left his pregnant wife home with his two sons and took a trip alone to Hawaii. He claimed he was setting up gigs there. Almost 40, Amanda was due to give birth on May 31, 2011. Shay reported that her mother told her she felt trapped in the marriage, much as Laura had just a year earlier. Amanda said she didn't want to be a 40-year-old single mother, so she would stick it out with Grant. On May 17th, the court-ordered psychologist's report was completed. The evaluator concluded that there was no evidence that Laura was mentally ill or unstable, as Grant claimed. However, he described her as less mature than other adults her age, easily overwhelmed, and vulnerable due to her poorly developed sense of self. The report noted Grant's rambling, chaotic thought process, his excessive negative comments about Laura, his anger towards her, and his portrayal of the children's mother in, quote, morally depraved ways, end quote. The psychologist also observed that Grant didn't edit these critical statements when the children were present. The report described Grant's intense rage for Laura as disturbing. Grant and Amanda had both expressed a desire to move far away, perhaps overseas, not considering the children's need to have equal time with their mother. It was as if they wanted to, quote, obliterate her, the psychologist wrote. Grant Hayes had not appropriately attached to his two young children, as he'd been away from them during their formative years. The boys were well bonded to their mother and had suffered trauma when Grant was given sole temporary custody. The report pointed out that the baby was not yet weaned when this occurred. The recommendation for custody of little Grant and Gentle was a 2-3-2 plan. The children would be with one parent for 2 days and 3 days with the other, before switching back to the first for 2 days, and the cycle would repeat. Parenting classes were recommended for Laura, and it was suggested that Grant see a psychiatrist for evaluation of a mood disorder. The report also stated that it appeared Grant was, quote, using multiple illegal drugs to self-medicate for an underlying mood or thought disorder, end quote. The final custody hearing was scheduled for August 2011. By that time, Laura would disappear. On June 9, 2011, Amanda gave birth to a baby girl, Lillian Ann Love Hayes. She was born 9 days late. Grant asked Laura if she would take the boys for a week while Amanda was due to deliver the baby. Laura was thrilled to do so. However, he became angry when he went to pick them up, and they cried, not wanting to leave their mother. Grant angrily told Laura there would be no more midweek visits. Meanwhile, Grant and Amanda were out of money. They needed to move out of their place as they could not afford the rent. Grant felt humiliated. He was forced to ask his parents to take him, his wife, and newborn daughter into their home. On Friday, July 8th, Laura picked up the boys for their scheduled weekend visit. All went well with no problems from Grant. On Tuesday, July 12th, Grant texted Laura and asked if she wanted to, quote, try the midweek thing again. Of course, she agreed. That night, Grant wrote a message to a friend in St. John. He said he and Amanda wouldn't return to the island until late August, quote, because of a court date for child support and shit. Nobody is going to give a black guy custody over a white girl, and North Carolina ain't going to let me share custody unless I stay here. And I just can't make a living here. I'm just going to let Laura keep the boys, he wrote. He concluded by asking his friend about a possible job for his wife in St. John. On July 13th, Laura told a business colleague she was going to pick up her kids for a visit. She did not hear from Laura again. On Friday, July 15th, Amanda called her daughter, who was supposed to help her and Grant move that weekend. Amanda told Shay that they weren't moving the next day as planned. "We're thinking of going to Texas," she said. In the background, Shay could hear Grant loudly complaining that he'd waited an hour to hand the kids over to Laura, but she'd never shown up. The following day, Saturday, Grant rented a U-Haul trailer and purchased several large ice chests. He also purchased bags of ice. At midnight, Amanda and Grant and the boys left North Carolina and drove to her sister's house in Texas, a 1,200-mile trip. On Sunday, Shay and others tried to call them, but neither answered their cell phones. On Monday, July 18th, the Hayeses arrived at her sister Karen's house at 5 a.m. On that same day, Laura's friend, Siobhan Mathis, called Grant's mother to find out if Laura had picked up the boys on Friday. Siobhan had been trying to reach her friend all weekend. When Patsy Hayes said that her son told her Laura hadn't shown up, Siobhan went immediately to the police and reported Laura missing. She told them about the custody battle between Grant and Laura, that she suspected foul play, and provided them with a recent photo of Laura. In Texas, Grant and Amanda were asking some strange questions of family members. There was a creek across the road from her sister's house, and Grant asked Karen's son if alligators were in it. He also asked how deep the creek was. A little later, Amanda asked another nephew if alligators ate people. She and Grant also asked him if feral hogs or sharks would eat someone. Grant received a phone call from the Raleigh Police Department asking if he'd been in contact with Laura. He said he hadn't been in contact with her since Wednesday the 13th, 2 days before she was last seen. He did not disclose that he was over 1,000 miles away in Texas. On Tuesday, Grant went to Home Depot, a big box hardware store, and purchased muriatic acid and 2 plastic trash cans. That morning, Amanda, looking weepy and distraught, told her sister, quote, "I hurt Laura. I hurt her bad." Her sister didn't ask for any details. On the 20th, 2 days after they arrived, Grant and Amanda left Texas. That same day, a detective searched their almost empty apartment in Raleigh. They noted a large bleach stain on the carpet inside the front door, and that the place smelled of bleach. Investigators quickly followed the paper trail to determine Grant Hayes' movements since Laura's disappearance. Receipts and video evidence obtained by investigators recorded Grant purchasing a saw, industrial trash bags, plastic tarps and goggles at a Walmart in Raleigh at 2 a.m. the morning after Laura disappeared. They also discovered the rental of the U-Haul and that the couple had driven it to Texas, where they'd visited her sister, Karen Berry. Just hours after the couple left Texas, investigators knocked on Karen's door. They told her that Laura Ackerson, Grant's ex-wife, had been reported missing. They asked her if she'd answer some questions. Beginning to cry, Karen said she'd tell them everything she knew, but asked if she could first pray to God for strength. Once she finished her prayer, a detective asked her, "Is Laura here?" Karen answered, crying, "I'm afraid she is. You need to look across the street." She pointed to Oyster Creek. Four days later, a portion of an armless female torso was found tangled in the weeds at the edge of Oyster Creek. A few hours later, the remainder of the torso was found. The next day, a head was discovered, and then a portion of a leg. Over 2 days, divers recovered over 60% of the body from the creek. Investigators believed they'd found the remains of Laura Ackerson, but the body would need to be positively identified through DNA testing. When results came back, they verified that it was Laura's body parts found in the creek. The next day, on July 25th, Grant and Amanda Hayes were taken into custody in North Carolina. They were held without bond on first-degree murder charges. Their three children were placed in the care of Grant's parents. An autopsy was conducted, and Laura's cause of death was recorded as undetermined homicide violence. Injuries to the neck suggested she may have been strangled, but because the condition the body was found in, the coroner could not positively confirm this. Grant and Amanda Hayes would be tried separately. Grant's trial was the first to be held in the Superior Court of Wake County, North Carolina, beginning in August 2013. The prosecution laid out its theory that Grant Hayes III lured Laura Ackerson to his apartment with the promise of extra time with her children. She was attacked and incapacitated and was most likely strangled to death. He then purchased tools and equipment to dismember the body in North Carolina. Her remains were placed in several coolers, loaded into a U-Haul van, and driven over 1,200 miles to Texas. He first tried to dispose of the remains by pouring muriatic acid over them. When that didn't work, he and his wife Amanda, quote, took a boat onto Oyster Creek and dumped Laura's body parts into the water with hopes that alligators would eat her remains, end quote. They stated that the motivation for this grisly crime was Grant's need to control Laura. The child custody hearing was imminent, and he believed Laura would be awarded custody of the boys. That was too much of an ego blow for Grant. He couldn't stand the thought of Laura gaining the upper hand, so he decided to get rid of her. He convinced his wife Amanda that Laura was psycho crazy and an unfit mother, so she was willing to help him. He was able to carry out the gruesome crime with her assistance. Amanda had already gone on record to say that she'd known nothing about the murder of Laura Ackerson until after they arrived in Texas. She claimed that she'd only agreed to help Grant dispose of the body because she feared for her life and the lives of the children. The couple were being tried separately after turning on one another. Grant claimed that Amanda had killed Laura in a jealous rage. But an inmate who'd been housed with Grant while he awaited trial testified that he'd confessed to the murder. He said Grant told him he'd been battling his boy's mother for custody. Grant claimed that Laura was, quote, constantly asking for money. He grew tired of it, Grant confessed, so he lured her to his apartment. Together, he and his wife Amanda subdued Laura, strangled her, and dismembered the body. They then took a road trip to a family member's home. The inmate, Pablo Trinidad, asked what he'd done with the body. Grant replied, "I just got rid of it." The prosecution was allowed to bring lyrics to two songs Grant Hayes had written. The first, titled Man Killer, read, quote, "Give in to me, I want it all. I want your scream, I want your crawl. I'll make you bleed, fall to the floor. Don't try to plead. Don't raise your arms, you can't stop me. I'll put my hands on your throat and squeeze." The second, Broomstick Rider, included the lyrics, "Baby mama, I got two kids by you. I can't take any more from you. You trying to take my kids. That's the way you live. I warned you. Price tag on your head. You must have told your attorney I have intentions of killing you." A signed document was found while searching Grant and Amanda's apartment. It was written in two different styles of handwriting. The first part, determined to have been written by Grant, read, quote, I, Laura J. Ackerson, for the sum of $25,000, agree not to pursue custody of the two minor children, Grant and Gentle Hayes. I am not surrendering parental rights, but I do consent to leave them in the sole custody of their father for now. Further, I agree to drop all pending litigation against their father in the Lenoir County Family Court. The bottom portion, written in Laura's handwriting, read, "By notifying counsel John Sargent of our arrangements less monetary considerations, I understand I'll be able to see my kids when I want at the discretion of their father." It was dated the day Laura went missing. Because it was found in plain view, while the rest of the apartment had been meticulously cleaned out, investigators theorized that Grant wanted it to be found. He hoped it would make people believe that Laura had taken the money and run off. He'd told anyone who'd listen that Laura didn't care about the boys and was trying to shake him down for money by insisting on custody. But witnesses who knew all the details about the custody battle between Laura and Grant testified that Laura had never once asked for child support. All she wanted was her children. The coroner testified that one of the injuries on Laura's neck may have been a knife wound. Prosecutors theorized that she'd been forced at knife point to write the last portion of the found agreement. On September 16, 2013, after only 2 hours of deliberation, the jury found Grant Hayes III guilty of first-degree murder. He received a sentence of life in prison without the possibility of parole. Amanda Hayes' trial began in January of 2014. She stuck to her claim that she had nothing to do with Laura's murder and wasn't home when it occurred. She also unequivocally stated that she had not helped Grant dispose of the body. Amanda's daughter Shay took the stand and testified that her mother called her on July 14th, the day after Laura was last seen, and asked her to pick up the boys. Shay said she kept the boys from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. She called her mother asking to return the boys, but Amanda had responded, "We need about 2 more hours." Amanda claimed she and Grant were looking for a moving truck. When Shay finally arrived to drop off the boys, Amanda insisted that she retrieve a vacuum cleaner from her house. Amanda said she needed to borrow it right away. A jailhouse informant also testified at Amanda's trial. The inmate told the jury that Amanda had admitted to her that she'd been in the room when Laura was killed. Amanda said Laura had been, quote, accidentally knocked to the floor. Grant was kneeling over Laura, looked up at Amanda, and announced that Laura was dead. The inmate also testified that Amanda had never mentioned feeling threatened by or afraid of her husband. On the contrary, she only professed her love for him, the witness stated. The jury took 2 days to come to a verdict. They found Amanda Hayes guilty of second-degree murder. They'd had the option of deciding for first-degree, second-degree, or acquittal. 9 of the jurors were in favor of a first-degree verdict. 2 voted for acquittal, and 1 was undecided. The jury members said they came to a compromise and convicted Amanda Hayes of second-degree murder because not one of them believed she didn't know Laura had been killed and dismembered before they reached Texas. She was sentenced to 13 to 16 years in prison. In April 2014, Amanda filed for divorce from Grant Hayes. It was finalized in October of that year. In 2018, Amanda was additionally charged with tampering with evidence, a human corpse, and was tried and sentenced to an additional 20 years. She will serve her sentences consecutively. Grant Hayes filed for an appeal in August 2014. It was denied. Grant IV, Gentle, and Lily Hayes are being raised by Grant's parents, Grant and Patsy Hayes. According to Shay, Amanda's daughter, quote, "All the children are healthy and doing well." That will do it for this episode of Once Upon a Crime. Join me next week for another episode in the series, Tarnished Hollywood. CrimeCon 24 is coming to Nashville this May. Secure your tickets now. They're selling out quickly. I'll be there, and I'd love to meet you on Podcast Row. Use my discount code ONCE for 10% off your registration. Get all the details and links to register on my website, truecrimepodcast.com. or click on the link in the show notes. Once Upon a Crime was written and produced by me, Esther Sanchez Ludlow. My executive producer is Lorena Garcia. Research for this episode was provided by Emma Battaglia. Until next time, be good to one another.